This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We said last week that Avraham Avinu had a mission and he had a style. His mission was Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying the Ribbono Shel Olam's name, and his style was Chesed. That was the method he used. But his life wasn't as simple as that, nor was his Avodas Hashem as simplified as that. For we see in last week's Seder that wasn't all he taught. By Yiven Shon Mizbeach LaHashem, in Beis El, it says that Avraham built an altar to Hashem, by Yikro B'Shem Hashem, and he taught the name of Hashem. So the first things he started teaching was not chesed. The first things he started teaching was not the morality and the ethics of interpersonal relationships. That came later. One of the important things that he taught from the outset was sacrifice, was the concept of the korban. He taught kodshim. Later on, a similar phrase is used with regard to his chesed in our sedra. Here it says, after it says that he planted a vayito eshel, that he planted a certain type of tree, which Chazal learn doesn't mean just the planting of the tree, but eshel is achio, shtio, and lino, that he provided food, lodging, and drink for passers-by, his achnosos orchim. Again it says, vayikro shom b'shem Hashem, that he called again in the name of Hashem that he taught. Here we are, vayita eshel b'be'er shova, he planted an eshel in be'er sheva, which doesn't just mean planting a tree. Rabbi Shmuel, says Rashi, there was an argument between Rabbi Shmuel, Chad Omar Pardes, that he planted an orchard, Lahavim imenu peris, lo'ochim b'su'udo. He planted an orchard so as to have exotic fruits with which to entertain his guests. Chad Omar Pundak l'achsanyo. And some say it was an inn. And he made a hotel there, he made a boarding house there. Be that as it may, we see Avraham Avinu occupying himself with the business of providing for visitors. Whether it was in planting an orchard of exotic fruits or providing a building into which people could come and find shelter, that's what he did. Vayikro shom b'shem Hashem keil olam, and he called there in the name of Hashem, the God of the world. So we see in two different stages of Avraham Avinu's life, he was teaching different things. In the earlier stage, what he taught was kodshim. He taught about the mizbeach, about the korban, how to bring a sacrifice to Hashem. Later on, he's teaching how to perform hachnasas orchim. One would expect, if anything, the order to be the other way around. One would have thought that his teaching program would have begun with teaching people hachnasas orchim and the ethics and the morality, and later on he would have come to the questions of kodshim, to the higher matters. But we see that that's not so. That he considered the higher matters to be the hachnasas orchim. He considered the higher matters to be the matters of the way that he treated people, and we're going to discuss that this evening. Why was chesed the style that Avraham Avinu chose? Why did it play such an important part, to the extent where in the later stages of his life, that's what he teaches more than the whole area of sacrifice? And in these two areas, the teaching of the pure, the word I hate to use, but it describes what I mean, is the pure ritual side of Yiddishkeit, on the one side, korbanos, and the moral side of Yiddishkeit on the other side, these two areas signify the whole apparent division of the Torah and the need to synthesize it. We learned in the ladies' shiur this morning about a fellow called Micho. And he was an interesting person because he spanned quite a period. He was born in Mitzrayim and he came with the Jews all the way through Mitzrayim. He came with Israel all the way through the Midbar, and he entered Eretz Yisrael. But in doing so, he imported with him the whole tendency towards Avodah Zorah. Micho was the person, Rashi says in Sanhedrin, who, when Moshe Rabbeinu had to use the Shem HaMeferosh, he had to use Hashem's special name, which he had to write on a piece of parchment and throw into the river Nile in order to discover where the coffin of Yosef was buried, and for it to actually rise out of the water for him to acquire it. So he wrote Hashem's name, put it into the water, and the coffin came up. Micha was watching, waited till Moshe went, and he took the name of Hashem and he put it in his pocket. He realized this was a powerful tool that he could use. And it was that that he used in order to get the Egel Hazor, to get the golden half calf, to form itself miraculously into a calf. You remember, everybody just threw their gold into the fire and out came a calf, magically. How did that miracle take place? With the Shem HaMeferosh, with God's special name. Who knew how to use it? Who knew how to utilize it and to make use of it? Micha knew how to use it because he was watching Moshe Rabbeinu at the Nile. And later on as well, he imports Avodah Zorah into Eretz Yisrael, and he's not a very good fellow. And the Gemara asks in Sanhedrin why he isn't counted among those people who have no chelek l'olam habo. Why isn't he counted among those people who don't have a part in the world to come? And the Gemara answers and says, in fact, worse than that, that Shiloh, which is the place where the Mishkan was, where the Korbanos used to be brought, and the place where Micha used to live, were only a few kilometers away from one another. And Micha was bringing sacrifices to his idols at the same time as in the Mishkan and Shiloh, they were bringing korbanos to the Ribono Shel Olam, and the smoke of the two sacrifices were getting mixed up, and the angels got angry and said to the Ribono Shel Olam, let's get rid of Micha, this is ridiculous, he's spoiling everything. And Hashem said, leave him alone. And that's the same reason why he does have a portion in Olam Habo, because he provides food for guests, for visitors, for passers-by, for travelers. And then the Tanakh tells us of a young man who was traveling and came past that town and went to call on Micha, because that was the place the travelers went to. So there we see the extreme tolerance that the Ribbono Shel Olam is willing to show, even to people who not only practice Avodah Zorah, but were responsible for the perpetration of Avodah Zorah after the time of Mitzrayim. They brought it out of Mitzrayim with them. He was responsible for the Egel Hazor, for the golden calf. He was responsible for subsequent acts of idolatry. And all that the Ribbono Shel Olam is willing to turn a bit of a blind eye to. Of course he'll have to be punished for it, but he's not going to be wiped out for it. His will to come is not going to be taken away because of that. For what reason? Because in addition to all that negativity, there's something positive about him. What is that positive? He provides food for the travelers. That's something worthwhile. So we see that the place of chesed, the place of kindness in Torah, is far more than just some kind of moral interrelationship between people and some kind of expedient social situation that is good for people to operate in. There's something much more spiritual than that about it. There's something much more fundamental than that about it. And Avraham Avinu graduates, so to say, from Kodshim. He starts off with those areas of teaching sacrifices, which are some of the most difficult areas of Torah and of Halacha, or the whole area of Vayikra. He graduates out of that and later on starts teaching Vayito Esho, how to plant an orchard for visitors, how to provide an inn and so on. Can you imagine today what would happen if that were the approach? What would we say of a man who goes to yeshiva and he's learning and learning and learning kodshim and he's becoming a big talmid chacham, he's learning all about korbanos and he learns one mesechta of kodshim and two mesechtas of kodshim, and afterwards, after he's a real talmid chacham, somebody meets him and says, "No, what are you going to be doing now? You've been learning for so long, what are you going to be doing?" He says, "Now I'm going to the next level." "What's the next level?" He says, "I'm joining the Southern Suns group. We're opening new hotels." "That's the next level? Is that what you're talking about? Holiday inns, we're going to make hotels all over the place." We wouldn't understand that. It wouldn't be conceivable. We don't see in our own minds any kind of connection. And if he doesn't say he's joining the Southern Suns group, if he says, "I'm opening an inn, I'm opening a hotel." Why are you opening a hotel? To provide for travellers. The travellers should have where to go. The Isaac Sher says that when his Rebbe, the Valtuk from Slabodka, used to walk past a new restaurant, he used to stand up in front, he used to stand in front of the restaurant and be amazed and say, "What an act of chesed. You should care for the balabos." He's opened the restaurant, he's obviously worked out a need, that there's a need for this, otherwise he wouldn't be able to make a living from it. So he's identified a need and he's providing food for people who need food. It's a business, he's doing it for money. But you know, business is becoming more and more aware of the fact that the best way to make money is to forget about making money a little bit and to provide good service. When you're providing good service, the money comes. When you're doing the job properly, the money comes. This is a new revelation in business. Forget about the money. The money is the reward, is the consequence of doing the service. And so it's with the Balei Musar, certainly with the Slabodka school. It's always been a strong point that when a person is in business, he's doing chesed. The fact that he's doing it for himself, that he's benefiting from it, doesn't matter. His whole mind is occupied with the process of providing services for people who have needs. And that in itself is an act of chesed, and there's nothing that says you're not allowed to benefit also from your acts of chesed. There's nothing that says that you're not allowed to have benefit from it. Adarabha, the person finds that he's earning his income from providing a service for people. That's a tremendous act of chesed. And so we see this great Avraham in the later years of his life. What is he doing? If we would go and we would call on him, we would expect to find him sitting with his Gemara open. He's putting up a hotel. That's his avodah. Not doing it just for a business. He was a wealthy man already. But that's the way he wanted to operate. He wanted to operate doing chesed. These two areas, sacrifice and chesed, are opposite areas. And yet they need to be synthesized, and one needs to understand their relative importance. Sacrifice is an avodas Hashem, a service of Hashem, through what we call hispashtus hagashmir, separating oneself from anything physical. That's sacrifice. Sacrifice is removing oneself from the material world, removing oneself from the social world, removing oneself from all things physical, and attaching oneself increasingly to things spiritual. That's the avodah of sacrifice. That's the avodah of parishus, of being separate. That's an avodah which the Mesillas Yesharim deals with quite early on in his perek on parishus. Hinei chlala parishus, the concept of parishus. Parishus means separation. That's what Chazal meant when they said, sanctify yourself even in those things that are permitted. There's a whole area of physical involvement in the world which is permitted, but even there they say that sanctify yourself. The term aliyus pyresh umarchik atzmei min hadova, that means separate and distance yourself from things, even with things which are permitted. Behind that is she'oser al atzmei dvar heter, where a person prohibits himself from becoming involved even in something which is permitted. And the purpose for that is that he keeps himself, then he keeps himself still further away from doing something which is wrong. If we'll just not do that which is wrong, then we're sailing close to the wind. But if a person says that I'm going, even things which are okay, I'm going to not get involved in, because it's too close to coming to that which is wrong, then he's on a still higher level, and he's distancing himself from things that are wrong. So there's a concept of precious. Zehu inyan ha-precious atzoiv, says the Mesillas Yesharim a little bit further on. This is positive precious. Shelo yikach min ha-ilom, and here he defines what precious is, that a man will only take from the world b'shum shimushu mishtamish mimenu, in any area in which he uses the world, he will only take elamashu muchrach boi mipnei ha-tzorech ha-sheloi b'tziva ilom. He will only take that which is absolutely essential for his physical nature to survive. That's all. He will eat only as much as he needs for survival. He will sleep only as much as he needs for survival. He will use the world in all areas, only in as much as he needs that area of the world for his own survival, in order to continue with his work, in order to continue with his avodas Hashem. That is the midah of precious. That's the ultimate midah of precious, where a person finds himself able to separate himself from anything physical that he doesn't need. That's the concept of sacrifice. That's conceptual sacrifice, where we take the physical and we sacrifice to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We don't want it for ourselves. We don't need it for ourselves. It's all given away to the Ribbono Shel Olam. All we're left with is the ethereal. All we're left with is the spiritual. And as much physical as we need in order to keep body and soul together. And that's it. That's all that we have. That's hispashtus hagashmis, where the person finds himself able to strip himself of any kind of involvement with things material, with things physical. So one level, that's precious. But there's another level, which is chesed. You can't be operative in the world of chesed if one's functioning that way. If one's functioning literally that way, we'll see how we can do it in a more sophisticated way. But the world of chesed requires involvement. Avraham Avinu wants to be involved in the world of chesed. What is he doing? He's planting orchards. He's building hotels. He's inviting people. He's sitting and talking to them. And what does he do when he's sitting and talking to them? He's not doing the kind of things that you sometimes see very, very shrewd people doing, very religious people doing, and they're sitting at a wedding and they're busy learning. They don't want to waste any time. So while everybody else is at the chasna, they've got a sefer out, they're busy learning. That's not what Avraham Avinu was doing. That's not what you can be doing when you're involved in the world of chesed. When you're involved in the world of chesed, if you're sitting at a table of people, You talk to them. You engage in conversation. You make them feel good. You inquire about them. You misameach the chosam the kala. You don't sit there and learn. That's not the right time for it. Everything has a time and place. You can learn in your mind, but you don't learn in a way which extracts you from a social involvement in an area which requires that involvement. That's if one's involved in the world of chesed. If one's involved in the hispashtus hagashmus, if one's involved in sacrifice, and one doesn't have anything, then you don't talk to anybody, you don't communicate with anybody, you don't eat anything, you don't sing and you don't dance, and you do your thing, you come and say mazel tov to the chosam kala, and you go home, and that's the end of the story. But if one's involved in the world of chesed, it's a different kind of world. One is involved with people, one is involved with things, one cannot extract oneself from it and be involved in the world of chesed at the same time. These things are very important in many areas. And an example that we had of it was today, and I battled with the rights and the wrongs of it, but I think that one can clarify it with these principles. After shul on Shabbos morning, the men normally sit down and they learn. Women have a shul, the men learn on their own. Occasionally we have a guest, and I invite the guest to say a shul at that time. But I'm very careful who I invite to say a shul. If it's just a mishuvah who's here collecting money, I don't invite him to say a shul. If I invite a person to say a shul, it's for two reasons. And not for one of the two reasons, both reasons must apply. The one reason is that he has something to say which will be of benefit to the people listening, even those who don't understand Hebrew. Sometimes it's good just to hear a shiur even if you don't understand it. But apart from that, we provide a translation service. So I must be satisfied in my own mind that those participating will get something, that everybody will get something out of it, and some people will get a lot out of it. Otherwise, I don't ask the person to say a shiur. The second requirement is that it's a person that requires that kovod. It's an honor, it must be a time of Chochem, a Rosh Yeshiva, that we have to show him that Kovod. So the two things have to be required, that he has something to say and that we have a need to show him recognition. What do you think it's like? A man comes, Rosh Yeshiva, who's used to saying Shiurim, who's used to being recognized in his own area. Everybody knows him. He's an outstanding Talmud Chochem, he's a big London, he writes for him, he's at home in Shas. Comes out to South Africa with a bunch of Amaratsim, and he has to go around raising money. What do we look at him like? Like a Mishulach. Imagine what that's like. Imagine if you were at the top of your field and you had to go around to an area where nobody knew you and nobody knew what kind of abilities you had in your field, and you had to clean the streets. And people treated you that way. What would it be like? So when I see it's that kind of person, I ask him to give a shiur so that he should at least feel like a Rosh Yeshiva in our own base of Medrash, not like a Meshulah. Those are the two conditions that I go through in my own mind before I invite a person to say a shiur at a time where people are learning. Otherwise they must say a shiur at some other time, and whoever comes, comes. But if I ask a person to say a shiur at a time which is one of our normal siddurim, either to take my place, either to say a shiur of mine, or to say a shiur while the Beis HaMedrash would normally be learning, then those two requirements have to be fulfilled. And I was looking around when I came off the Lady Shiur, and a number of people sitting around in the Beis HaMedrash learning, not attending the shiur. They think they're big tzaddikim, of course, because they've got to say that, they've got to learn, what's more important. And they're right. They would have to give up their own Seder. But here's a man who needs that COVID, apart from the fact, even if we'll say that you have nothing to learn from him, even if you'll say that you have nothing to gain from him, that you'll sit for an hour and you'll listen to an outstanding Talmid Chacham giving a shiur, translated into English, and you'll gain nothing. Let's even say that. But the COVID Talmid Chacham, as a Talmid Chacham, surely that COVID he deserves, that you sit and you listen. And how often have I given you the example of the Rebbe Lokin, how he used to make an effort to come and listen to the shmuzim of the young Mashgiach that he was training in Fachsidim at the time. Not that the Mashgiach could say anything that Rebbe would learn from, but that was the Kovod he wanted to show him. And that's why we're makpid in the Beis HaMedrash, that if there's a shiur, people attend the shiur, whether they'll get anything out of it or not. They have to attend the shiur because that's a Kovod to the Talmid Chacham. So I wasn't sure in my own mind. On the one hand, maybe it was a shiur, those who want to listen to the shiur listen to the shiur, those who want to learn will learn. But I've been thinking about it the whole afternoon, and it's wrong. It's not right. Certainly not to sit in the Beis HaMedrash and learn privately. That's a bizoyon HaTorah. How can one do that? A Rosh Yeshiva is busy giving a shiur, and one's sitting in the same Beis HaMedrash, not at the shiur, one's sitting in the same room, at a separate table, while he's giving a shiur somewhere else. That's not so. What is one learning for then? If one's not mechabed, the source of that Torah, what is one learning? Books? One goes out, one goes and learns in another room, or one goes and learns at home. Look, at least one's not publicly embarrassing the person. But even then, a far greater thing is to say, good, so it's an hour of my time, I'll have to make up my learning seder at another time, but this is an opportunity for me to show kovod to a man who needs that kovod. He needs it more than the money he's raising. He needs the recognition more than the money. If he's got the recognition, he'll be effective in his fundraising. He needs to be made to be recognized. He needs to feel that we appreciate him. He needs to feel that we're giving up our seder to listen to his Torah. That's the Mesiras Nefesh. That's chesed. That's what chesed is. That's Avraham Avinu. If you're involved in the world of chesed, you can't separate yourself. You can't be involved in his pashtus hagashmis, in your own little world, and not notice what's going on around and about one. If one's involved in the world of chesed, there has to be that recognition. And we'll see in a moment also the extent of sacrifice that there has to be. And in chesed we come to the much higher level in the Mesilas Yesharim. When he comes to Kedusha, which is towards the end of the Sefer, many, many sections further on, and he says there, V'hinei ha'ish ha'miskadesh b'kedusha ha'zboiroi, the person who has sanctity, afilu ma'asov ha'gashmim choizrim liyetz in yonei kedusha mamish, even his physical activities become spiritual activities at the same time. And this the Mesilas Yesharim holds as a much higher level. The one level is to say, I can't spiritualize my physical activities, so I will minimize my physical activities. I will do only that which is essential, so that the bulk of my life will be spiritual. The level of Kedusha, which is a much higher level, is when a person is able to say, I can spiritualize even my physical activities, and therefore, while he's doing them, even at the very time that he's doing them, they become inyone Kedusha mamash. The Simonecho Achilas Kodshin explains the Mesilas Yesharim, and the example is when the Kohanim eat Kodshin. What is a Korban? Korban is sacrifice. What is sacrifice? That's the prime image that we're using here for a life of Hispashtus Hagashmis, for a life of separation of things physical. But one of the essential elements of sacrifice is Achilas Kodshin. That in most sacrifices they need to be eaten, they need to be consumed. That's very physical. And that very act of consumption, he mitzvah. He atzmo mitzvahs ase, itself is a mitzvahs ase. As Chazal say, kohanim oichlim uvalim miskaprim. When a person brings a korban chatas, when a person brings a sin offering, what's his sin offering for? For having indulged in something he shouldn't have indulged in. What is the kapora for that? What is the atonement? He brings a sacrifice. And part of the bringing of the sacrifice is the kohanim tuck in and they eat it. That consumption is not all burnt up. They eat the sacrifice, they eat part of it. That act of eating is called kodshim, that's part of the kedusha, that's part of the sanctity. So sanctity is not a denial of things physical, says the Mesilas Yesharim. That's precious. Precious is when one is on the level that one needs to deny things physical in order to dedicate oneself to things spiritual. Kedusha is when one is on the level that one can take things physical and make them spiritual by the way one operates, depending who the person is and on what level he's holding. And this is the difference, he says, between the Torah, the pure person, and the Kodesh. HaTorah, the pure person, Ma'asav HaChumrim Einam Lo Elo Hechrechim. A pure person, his physical deeds are only those which are essential. V'hu Atzmein Niskavim Boim Elo Atzada Hechrech. And his own intentions are only because they're essential. You'll say to him, why are you eating? I'm eating because I have to survive. Why are you sleeping? I'm sleeping because I have to survive. That's all he'll do. And that way they remove themselves, those actions extract themselves from being negative material activities and they become pure. But they are not transferred, they are not converted into sanctity. Because this person believes that if he could manage without it, it would be even better. If he didn't have to sleep, it would be better. If he didn't have to eat, it would be better. He does those actions reluctantly. But a Kodesh, this high, high level of Kedusha, where a person is constantly attached to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the nafshei mishaleches bein hamuscholus ha'amitiyus, the avas boyle v'yirosu, and his soul is always occupied and involved with intellectual concepts and his love for Hashem, he nechshav lo ki'ilu mishalech lifnei Hashem ba'aretz sachayim odenu po ba'olam hazeh. He's considered as if he is walking around in Hashem's area, walking around in Gan Eden, even while he's in this world. V'hinei ha'ish kazeh hu atzmo nechshav kemishkan kemikdash uchemizbeach. And such a man is like the Beis Hamikdash, like the mizbeach, like an altar. And that's how the others were. That's how Avraham Avinu was. Therefore, we see based on this Mesilas Shishorim, how Avrom regards Chesed as the higher level. His earlier levels he taught sacrifice, how to deny yourself in order to dedicate yourself to spiritual things, to the Ribbono Shel Olam and to Torah. Later on he gets an even higher level where he can plant an orchard and he can build a business and he can involve himself in negotiations. And all that is Kedusha. All that is an act of chesed dedicated to sanctity, that's an even higher level, which he comes to in our Sedra much later on. And that's Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. Now he's teaching a different kind of Avodah Hashem. He's teaching the Avodah of chesed. He's teaching the Avodah of engagement in the world, not disengagement from the world. The first level is disengagement, is sacrifice, self-denial, disengagement. The second level, the higher level, is engagement in the world, activity in the world, elevation of the world through one's dedication of it to higher purposes. But even in sacrifice there can be chesed. And here we come to the synthesis of the two, which of course is the primary contribution that Avraham Avinu made to civilization. And the foundations he created for Torah. Avraham Avinu, the first Jew, what was it? What was that foundation? That these two avodos, these two approaches to the service of God are not irreconcilable. One doesn't have to choose the one or the other. That there is such a thing as chesed in sacrifice, even in korban, there is such a thing as chesed. There's the lovely medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, Parsha Lamed Daled, on the posuk in Mishlei, Goymel Nafshoi Ish Chesed. Difficult to translate. One who but literally translated, it means one who bestows to himself is a man of chesed. That means. So the Medrash says, "Ze Hillel Hazokin." This is Hillel Hazokin, the old Hillel. Shebashor shehoyo nifto mitalmidov. When he used to leave his talmidim and he used to go, hoyo mahalich vahilich imam. He used to go and then he used to go with them. Omru lo talmidov. His talmidim used to say, "Rebbe lahecha natahilich." So they used to say to him, "Rebbe, where are you going to?" Amar lohem, "Ligmul chesed im hadei nachsan yabugu beiso." I'm going to do kindness to the guest at my home. Amru lohem, "Kol yoim islach achsanya." They said to him, "Do you have a guest every day? Every single day we ask you the question and every day you give us the same answer. You're going to do chesed to your guest. But we've never seen this guest. Who is he?" Amar lohem, "Vadei napsho aluv telab achsanya hu begu gufo." Is my neshoma not a guest in my body? Today my soul is here, tomorrow it might not be here anymore. It's a passing guest. Surely my soul is a guest in my body. So what is Hillel HaZokin teaching us here? That chesed is not only to other people. Chesed is to oneself as well. That if one views, one can view one's neshama, one can view one's spirituality as an object of one's kindness. One has to be kind to oneself too. One has to be kind to one's neshama. So when a person performs an act of sacrifice which elevates his soul, what is he doing? Is that really sacrifice? His body is sacrificing, but what for? To perform a chesed to his soul, to his neshama. So one can perform chesed not only to other people, one can be performing chesed all the time. One can be performing chesed even in the personal things one does. One can be performing chesed even in the acts of sacrifice. They too can be seen as acts of kindness, of acts of chesed. Acts of chesed to who? To one's own soul. That's also, he's also deserving of chesed. I gave in one of the shiurim the example of the lady, whose wife is a Rosh Hashiva, and she's a housewife, 9 children or something like that, and she once accompanied her husband on a fundraising trip, and a rich balabos said to him, "What do you do?" And he said, "Well, he's a Rosh Yeshiva, he teaches, he has a big yeshiva, he has 150 talmidim," explains what he does. And the balabos is very impressed, and he says to the wife, "And what do you do?" So she was very quick and realized right away, not so she was about to destroy her husband's chances of success. So she said, "I take care of homeless children." And he said, "That's very nice, that's wonderful. Do you have a big institution?" She said, "No, I can't afford a big institution. Well, I've got 9 children that I take care of." "Wonderful," he says, "that's tremendous. Do you have a building for them? Where do you house them?" She said, "No, they stay with us." "Incredible," he said, "they stay with you? That's amazing. And you do this all by yourself? Who funds it?" She said, "I fund it myself. We pay for it ourselves. We don't raise funds for that. My father's job is the yeshiva. My husband's job is the yeshiva. And we look after these 12 children all on our own." He says, "Incredible. Can't get over it. And do you employ staff?" She says, "No, I can't afford to employ staff. I have to do it all myself." He He says, "What do you? You don't employ any staff." She says, "No. Who cleans the place? I clean. Who cooks? I cook. Who attends to their schooling? I do. Who pays for their schooling?" She says, "We do. We pay for their schooling." He just can't get over this. Then she breaks the news to him. She says, "They're my children." And he sees the disappointment in his face. All of a sudden, she's gone down in his estimation, who knows how many notches. And she says to him, "Why is a housewife so less worthy in your mind? Just because they're my children, is that worse? If they were somebody else's children, it would be a bigger mitzvah than to look after my own children. If they were somebody else's mitzvah, you thought I'm doing the most wonderful thing. You're about to give me more money than you would give my husband. I tell you they're my own children, you get disappointed." One has to realize chesed doesn't only have to be done with strangers. Chesed can be done with one's own family, and chesed can be done with oneself. Chesed is a state of being. Chesed is when you're doing things to improve anything outside your own physical needs. When you're doing something to improve anything which is outside of your own physical needs, you're involved in chesed. Whether the beneficiary is your own soul, or your wife, or your children, or your parents, or your grandchildren, or you're the beneficiary or strangers, it doesn't matter. All those are acts of chesed. Those are external acts, outward acts, where you're improving your environment. You're improving things outside of yourself. That's an act of chesed. And so Hillel Azotkin says, even when I go and I attend to the needs of my neshama, I attend to the personal needs of my own spirituality, that's also chesed. Not only when I'm teaching you, am I performing an act of chesed. When I attend to my own needs, I'm also performing an act of chesed. That too is an act of chesed. That is chesed in sacrifice. You find that even in sacrifice, even in self-sacrifice, there is still chesed being done. It's not separate. Even when one is sacrificing, one is only sacrificing physical things, but one might be performing a chesed on many other levels. What about sacrifice in chesed? What is the level of sacrifice in chesed? That's the beginning of the parsha. Avraham Avinu has just had his bris. There's an old man, a very old man. He's performed the bris not only on himself, but on his entire household and all his talmidim. So he's had a very difficult time, and finally he performs the bris on himself. And he's suffering. This is the third day after his bris, no anesthetic, and he's ill, he's sore, he's in pain, he's ill. And in order not to trouble him, because he would normally have to entertain guests, that would be his normal, not his job. If it was his job, he would just call in sick. That would have been no problem, but it wasn't a job, it was a mission. And when one has a mission, one doesn't call in sick. That's the difference between a mission and a job. A mission you perform at all times, because when you're not performing your mission, you're not living. That's the difference between a mission and a job. A job, you have a life, and part of your life is your job, and sometimes other things take precedence over your job. Sometimes you're ill, so you don't work that day, that's all. You have other things to do, you've got to go to the doctor, so you don't work at that time. That's a job. But a mission isn't like that. A mission you never take off from. A mission is 24 hours a day. And Avraham had a mission. Chesed was part of his mission. It was the style of his mission. And so even though it was the third day after his bris, he wouldn't call him sick. He would want to work. He would want to be doing chesed. So the Ribbono Shel Olam makes it an unbelievably hot day. One knows when one sometimes experiences hot days in this country. But that's nothing compared to hot days in the Middle East. And think of the hottest day, and that's not even what one's talking about. The hottest day in the Middle East, that would have been natural. We're told this was supernatural, but Ribbono Shel Olam made it so hot that it was something unbelievable. So one can imagine the extent of the heat to the point where nobody left their houses. Everybody cancelled all their arrangements. Nobody left their houses. Everybody stayed at home. There was nobody that Avraham could possibly entertain. So he was an oinus. He was a real, for reasons totally beyond his control, his mission had to come to a standstill. But Avraham wasn't satisfied. He went out and he went looking and searching. Ribbono Shel Olam realizes that he's causing himself, that he's causing Avraham additional pain and anguish, and so he produces the three angels that come and that Avraham invites in. What degree of Mesiras Nefesh? There are two ways of looking at chesed. The one is a chesed where an individual is willing to respond to any call for chesed. Somebody knocks on his door with a need, he will respond. If it's money, he'll respond with money. If it's advice, they will respond with advice. If they need a place to sleep, he'll provide a place. Any need, he will respond. It's an incredible level of chesed. And he'll respond with a happy heart. You'll knock on his door and he'll welcome you in. And he'll invite you in. And he'll smile and he'll treat you honorably. Tremendous ability to respond to chesed. Anything you need, you know you can go to so-and-so. But that's not yet the level of chesed that Avraham Avinu demands of himself and of others. There's another kind of level of chesed, and that is You're not in chesed in order to respond to a call on yourself for chesed. But you seek opportunities for chesed. If that's a mission, if that's the way of doing things, one seeks opportunity, one looks for the opportunity to do chesed. One doesn't just wait for the response. One actually goes out to try and do chesed. So Avraham wasn't willing to sit at home and say, well, it's a hot day, just as well, I'm so sick. It must be from the Ribbono Shel Olam, which it was, the sign that I can take the day off. Now, a day off from life, that's what it would mean. Since this was a mission, this wasn't a job, there's no such thing as a day off. That's like taking a day off from life. I don't want to live today. Let's cancel life today. Nobody does that. We all want to live today, even if it's hard. And if a mission is part of our life, there's no such thing as a day off from my mission. This is my mission. This is it. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam actually has to create a condition to satisfy Avraham's need for chesed. Avraham doesn't satisfy other people's needs for his chesed. Avraham has the need for the chesed. The giver has the need for the chesed. That's the kind of chesed that Avraham is teaching. It's not a question of if somebody needs, I will provide. It's a question of I need to provide. How can I find somebody who needs? And if I can't find, I need to create a condition where there's a need. That's what I need to do. That again is a principle which business is recognizing. Business is not just fulfilling a need. Sometimes business is creating a need. Sometimes a businessman has a good idea, nobody needs it, but he makes people need it pretty quickly. That's part of business. And there's a principle in that, there's something deep in that, that's not just a business principle. But if we have a need, if we have a need to produce something, we need to create a need in the world for the thing which we're producing. What happens if a person has a good idea? He writes a book. Why does he write a book? Because he wants to express himself. Is it good enough to write it and then nobody wants to publish it? And then it gets published and nobody buys it? No. Then he promotes his book. He wants people to buy it, not because he'll make money out of it, but because his need to give his idea over to the world means that part of that need to give is the need to create in the world a desire to have what I want to give. Otherwise there can be no giving. And that's all part of chesed. Chesed is not responding to a need, chesed is creating a need if necessary. I need to give, and therefore I need to create the need for what I have to give. And then the two can join together and there can be a dynamic flow. So Avraham needs to create the need for chesed. That's a much higher level. That's not only chesed. And we saw that there was such a thing as chesed in sacrifice. That even in self-sacrifice there can be kindness. What we're looking at here is the reverse, the converse. We're looking at the fact that even in kindness there can be self-sacrifice. But kindness is not just responding to the needs of others, but going all the way and sacrificing one's own comforts to create a need that one can fulfill. And it's amazing how far the Ribbono Shel Olam goes. According to one view, these angels actually ate. Angels don't eat, but Hashem made them, made these angels able to eat so as to satisfy that need. So Hashem actually creates a bria, a special creature, in order to satisfy Avraham's need to provide hachnasas orchim, to provide food for his guests. And why does Avraham do that? Because that's the essence of his whole basis of chesed. Avraham's chesed is not just fulfilling a need. Avraham's chesed is emulating the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'holachto bidrachav. But we're obliged to follow the Ribbono Shel Olam's way, to become godly. How do we become godly? We've got to act godly. What does acting godly mean? Did the Ribbono Shel Olam just respond to our needs? No. He created the world. He created a world that needed him. Before the world was created, the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't have the world to respond to. And he wasn't satisfied with that. Part of being God is doing good. And doing good means that there must be people who need good. So he created people who needed that good. He created a whole world, a whole universe that needed him in order that he could give. Maybe that's part of what drives people to parenthood. That's maybe part of what drives people to want to have families. To create little beings who need one. So that one can respond to it, one can give chesed. But it's actually creating the need, it's not responding to a need. Parenthood is not saying, well, if children come along, I'll take care of them. It's not saying that at all. Parenthood is saying, I have a need to give, so I will create nebuchadnezzar little kids who need what I have to give. That's chesed, that's the whole of the godly dynamic of the giver of chesed and the receiver of chesed. Not just response to a need, but the very creation of the object of that need. I create one who needs what I can give. And so the chesed that Avraham taught was not the chesed that was known before. There was chesed before. People helped each other. People were concerned with one another. Shem ve'eva were also there. There was some kind of Torah being taught. But up until that time, what was being taught was the need to respond generously and immediately and urgently to any need that there is. That was the chesed that was taught up till then. Avraham starts a whole new concept of chesed. To create a need for my chesed. That's something else. I am the one who has the need. I have to give the chesed. And therefore I have to create the conditions for my giving of that chesed. That's what Avraham was mechadesh. That's what he taught that wasn't known before. And that chesed is something which applies in all areas. Chesed is not just, and we see the importance of chesed, and that it's an integral part, an essential part of Avodas Hashem. And that just as one wants to be in a state of doing mitzvahs all the time, one wants to be in a state of chesed all the time, that whatever one's doing has a dimension of chesed to it. And one realizes that chesed is not just physical and material. And we tend to see it that way. Providing a chesed, somebody has a material need, we'll take care of it. Because our whole tendency today is to become more material, even in spiritual areas. That's not really what it is. If one looks at it today, perhaps what people in our kind of environment and in our kind of society suffer from more than physical needs are social needs. People suffer from loneliness. People suffer from lack of recognition. People suffer from being ignored. People suffer from low self-esteem. These are the things that really cause much more suffering than physical things. The physical things also, that's the easier part of chesed. The Gemara says in Ksubas, I think it is, Godol hamalbin shinayim shu chaveiro yeso mehamashkei cholov. That it's greater to make a person's teeth white than it is to give him milk. What are those two images? Giving him milk is even more than giving him water. The person who is soothed by milk, you give a person milk, that means he's thirsty, he's hungry. If he's just thirsty, you give him water. But if he's thirsty, he's hungry, he's undernourished, he's cold, he's uncomfortable, you give him milk, and not only does it satisfy his thirst, but it soothes him, makes him feel better, it satisfies his undernourishment and so on. A big chesed, you give a person milk who's hungry, somebody comes in to your door and says, I'm thirsty, can I have some water? To notice that it's not just water he needs more than that. And to offer him milk instead of water, that's a big act of chesed, that's an act of thinking chesed. But even greater than that, says the Gemara, is to make his teeth white. That means to make him smile. Bigger than that, much more important than that. To create a smile on another person's face is a greater act of chesed than quenching his thirst. And we know how urgent a thirst is. A person comes and he needs a glass of milk. He's that undernourished that he needs a glass of milk. One understands the agony of that person. And one understands the relief he finds in the glass of milk that you offer him. Chazal are telling us that the agony of loneliness, isolation, alienation, misery, depression is much worse than that. And the relief of being made to smile is much more than that. Much more than the glass of milk. And it doesn't cost a penny. That's a chesed. One can be doing that all the time. One can be doing that with strangers in the street. One can be doing that at any time. And in our environment here in South Africa, something terrible is happening at the moment. That is, people are becoming negative. People are becoming negative about themselves. They're becoming negative about the country. They're becoming negative about their businesses. They're becoming negative about their families. It's not only here, by the way, but it's really bad here. All the pressures, and people just can't see the way out of it. And the tendency is when somebody starts telling you, oh, you know, things are bad and things are difficult and they're not getting any better, and you know what people say, that this year is an average year. It's worse than last year, but nothing as bad as next year will be. And when people tell you that kind of thing, and you say, yes, yes, taka, yeah, it's hard, it's difficult, and you support them in their feeling, that's no chesed. You've got to get them to smile. You've got to be able to get them to feel the optimism, to be able to see the way out. That's a chesed. And just imagine if one had people doing that, if one had a body in society that was doing that, how quickly you could reverse everything. And if people, instead of scowling at each other, smiled at one another, and if people communicated with one another and felt warm about one another, how much more could be achieved? Or an organization, or on a macro level, with an entire nation, how changed that could be. Godol hamalbin shinayim shel chaver. Make the other person's teeth white. See the whiteness of his teeth. Make him smile. Much more important than giving him a glass of milk. That's the chesed of Torah. Chesed of Torah is in the way you make the other person feel. Giving him the glass of milk or the water or the charity, that's only a tool to make him feel better. But the chesed really is to change his feelings, not to change his bank balance. That's not the chesed. The Ribbono Shel Olam can change his bank balance. The Ribbono Shel Olam wanted him to be wealthy, he would give him money. That's not the problem. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need you to change his bank balance. The Ribbono Shel Olam needs you to make him feel good. One of the ways of making a poor person feel good is to give him money. To make a thirsty person feel good is to give him water or to give him milk. But that's only one of the ways. Godol Hamalbim Shemayim, even greater, is to make sure that in doing that, and if necessary in doing other things or doing alternative things, make him smile. Just make him feel good. There are all sorts of studies done, and I'm sure you've read about them, about the extent of the endorphins, I think they're called. Is that right, Jerry? When you do exercises, what do you get? Endorphins that make you feel good. That's what makes these people run. I've always wondered what makes people run. I've asked all the runners, do you enjoy it? They all tell me they don't. It's terrible, it's horrible. So why do you do it? Because they feel so good afterwards. So I said to them, so why don't you try learning Gemara? It's the same. Gemara is also terrible when you start. You're breaking your teeth and you don't understand what's going on and you're confused, but you feel so good afterwards. So they say, but you become addicted to running. So I said, why don't you become addicted to Torah? It's interesting. It's the same thing. It's hard in the beginning, but it's wonderful afterwards, but you don't become addicted. Ah, it's the endorphins. There's a drug that actually addicts you. You feel very good. It's a physical feeling. It's not a spiritual. Torah is a spiritual feeling. But the way you feel after you've done a lot of physical exercise is physically on a high. Like a drug. It is a drug. And they find that one of the biggest generators of endorphins is laughter. Smile to laugh. Makes one feel very, very good. It's a big chesed to give people that one drug. Don't try it with any other drugs, but that one drug which comes from within oneself makes people feel good, provides them with their own inner resources of endorphins. That's a big chesed. Make him laugh, make him feel good. That's important. Lastly, what's this whole business of sacrificing Yitzchak? Where did that fit in? Where's the chesed? Where's the Kiddush Hashem? Who's doing the kindness? Is Hashem doing kindness to Avraham by telling him to sacrifice his son and scaring the life out of him, and then last minute providing the ram there? That's Hashem's idea of kindness? Is Avraham performing an act of kindness to Yitzchak? Is Yitzchak performing an act of kindness to Avraham? We said there's a sense of mission. Everything Avraham does, there's chesed in. Where's the chesed here? There's a medrash, a difficult medrash, that says the following. Yishlach Avraham es yodoy. Avraham stretched out his hand and was about to shecht his son. This is in Parsha Nun Vav in Vayeru. Yishlach Avraham es yodoy. Says the medrash, Hu sholeach yad litur lefasakin. He put his hand out to pick up the knife. The einov meirido is demois. I've always wondered, how did Avraham look at that man? Was he smiling? Was he excited to perform this incredible mitzvah? Was he crying? What was he doing? He was about to perform the greatest mitzvah, sacrificing his own son. What did his face look like? The Midrash tells us. Tears were pouring down his eyes. And the tears of the mercy of the father were falling into the eyes of Yitzchak as Yitzchak lay there. Can you imagine that picture? Yitzchak lying there looking up into the face of his father, and his father's eyes dripping with tears into the eyes of Yitzchak. The Yafal Pikein Halev Sameach Lasos Ritzon Yitzchak. But inside, his heart was happy to do Hashem's will. So the Medrash tells us, if you would have looked at Avraham's face, you would have seen sadness, crying, tears. If you would have looked at him inside, you would have seen a very happy heart. And there's a lot of difficulty with this Medrash. People ask, how can that be that Avraham was crying? If he surely Avraham was on the level where he had resolved all his emotional difficulties, he'd overcome them, and he'd understood this had to be done, this was the will of Hashem, why was he crying? Surely that's a weakness. Surely that shows that there's something in him still that hasn't accepted this mitzvah he's about to perform. And Rabbi Isaac Sher, the same Rabbi Isaac that we learned last week, explains it too beautifully. And he says, what is the instruction that Hashem gives him? Kach mo es bincho, take your son. Es yechidecho, your only son. Ashero havto, the one that you love. Es Yitzchak, take Yitzchak. Let lecha and go and sacrifice. Says Rabbi Isaac Sher, the normal psychological way that Avraham would have had to handle that mitzvah is to disassociate himself emotionally from his son, to become distant, to become cruel, to become cold, just to turn off his feelings towards his son. That would have enabled him to perform the mitzvah. Sometimes one has to do cruel things, and it's hard to do it if at the same time one feels warmth and love. One actually has to disassociate oneself sometimes. That's one of the problems that I think the medical profession has, particularly surgeons and people who operate in that area, where you've got to do things that while you're doing them, they cause pain and they cause suffering, and you're cutting people open. The only way you can do it is to actually disassociate yourself from it. And they tell me the kind of conversation that goes on in the operating theatres is not the kind of conversation that the patient would take great pleasure in hearing. But it's a very light-hearted sort of... And the doctors tell me you have to, it's the only way to stay normal. And while they're doing autopsies, that's one of the things that we're upset about autopsies, that they can't treat it with gravity and with seriousness because they'd be out of their minds. The only way they can do it is by disassociating themselves and treating it lightly and so on. That's the way we tend to handle ourselves when we're required to do things which are emotionally antagonistic to our true feelings. So we cut off our feelings, we make ourselves cold, we make ourselves harsh. But that's not what Hashem asked, and I'm wrong. Hashem said, I want you to sacrifice who? Not Yitzchak. I want you to sacrifice your son, and you must feel that he's your son all the way through, right until you slaughter him, until you shecht him. You must feel him as your son. Es yechidcho, I want you to feel that he's your only son. Don't forget about it. Don't think in your mind, Hashem will provide me with another son, surely there must be some master plan. I want you to live the fact that this is your only son. And it's your only son you're sacrificing. Don't forget about it. Don't turn yourself off from that. Asher Ahavto, I want you to do it with all your love. Don't stop loving him for a moment. Bring that together to the altar. Bring that love as well. It's Yitzchak, bring Yitzchak. So what he's asked to sacrifice is not Yitzchak. He's asked to sacrifice his paternal love. He's asked to sacrifice his vision of the future for his son. He's asked to sacrifice all of his emotions and all of his feelings, not just to sacrifice the boy. And that's why it was the correct thing, says Rabbi Isaac Scherfer, to be crying at that moment. Because those tears that fell into the eyes of Yitzchak, that's what he had to sacrifice, not Yitzchak. Once he'd done that, Yitzchak didn't have to be killed anymore. Yitzchak could be saved and Aram could be killed. The sacrifice was already complete. The love had been sacrificed. The mercy had been sacrificed. The fatherly feelings had been sacrificed. The vision of the future had been sacrificed. That's all Hashem wanted him to sacrifice, not the physical body. And so here we see an even higher level. Earlier we talked about sacrifice on the one hand and chesed on the other. Disengagement from the material world and engagement in the material world. And then we saw that even in sacrifice there is chesed. Even in disengagement there is kindness to one's soul. There is chesed even in korban, there is chesed even in sacrifice. And then we went further and we saw that there is sacrifice even in chesed. But creating the condition for chesed, not just responding to chesed, but creating the conditions for chesed, is an act of sacrifice. So there is sacrifice in chesed. But here we come to the greatest level of all, the sacrifice of chesed. Taking Avram's most precious belonging, not his son, but his feelings for his son. That's the most precious belonging. Because the true chesed that we're talking about is not just acts of kindness. We're talking about acts of kindness that are expressions of feelings of kindness. We're talking about godly chesed, not human chesed. And godly chesed is ki anu vonecho ve'atzo avinu. We are your sons and you are our fathers. You are our father. Hashem's chesed to us is the chesed, is the kindness of a father to a son. And that's the chesed we need to emulate. So when we act with kindness to other people, it's not just to act in kindness. It's to feel for the other person as a father feels for a son. That's what we're meant to feel. And the action is just an expression of that feeling. We've got to feel for people the way Hashem feels for people. As if they're our children. And we've got to take all of that feeling and all of that emotion and gather it together and then perform an act of chesed. Then it comes a little easier. And that love, that ahava, that which enables us to make other people smile. When does another person smile? Is when he doesn't feel threatened, when he feels comfortable. When he feels comfortable if he feels you love him, if he feels you care for him. And to take that love, the greatest of it that Avraham had, all the love that he felt for everybody, he felt most love of all for Yitzchak, for his own son. And not only is there sacrifice in chesed, but here Avraham was asked to take those feelings of chesed, to take those feelings of love, and to make a sacrifice of chesed. To make sure that chesed didn't become a religion of its own. To make sure that kindness, that humanity, that humaneness that morality, that ethics doesn't become a religion. You see sometimes people being interviewed from the SPCA, sometimes they talk about shechita, and sometimes they talk about circus animals, and you see a religion made out of cruelty to animals. Absolute religion. If you said to these people, I want you to sacrifice your belief in cruelty to animals for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Sacrifice your belief in cruelty to animals for human beings, for the benefit of mankind. They wouldn't. There is nothing greater than their belief in cruelty to animals. That's the highest level there is. Of course cruelty to animals is important. Of course that's a part of the Torah too. But whatever there is, we have to be willing to sacrifice it to something yet higher. And the final test of Avraham Avinu is has your chesed become a religion? Has it substituted the altar? Or is it still synthesized with the altar? Can you bring your chesed onto the altar if you had to? That's what Avraham is tested for. Kach noes bincho. Take not only Yitzchok, but take all your love. Take your beloved one, your only one. Take all your emotions, take all your feelings. Es bincho, es yechidcho, asher ahavto, es Yitzchok. And bring him, elevate him onto the sacrifice of dedication, onto the altar of dedication to the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'ha'aleihu shom lo'ilo. And bring him not only Yitzchok, but all that goes with Yitzchok, there to us as a sacrifice to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Requires him to make money. It's true that if he's nice to his customers and so on, it's all, it helps, but that's not good midas, because if he's nice to his competitors, then he doesn't do so well. So the business environment doesn't encourage good midas. What about the professional environment? In the professional environment, does it encourage good midas to be a doctor? Does it encourage good midas to be a professor at university? Does it encourage good midas? What would you say? It doesn't. All these things require people to, they're all business. At the end of the day, it's all business or politics or both. So what is it that if a person is a Talmid Chochem, so fine, so whatever he's doing, it doesn't matter, he's a Talmid Chochem and he governs himself with good midas irrespective of what he's doing. But if he's not a Talmid Chochem and his involvement is in his work or his profession, his business or whatever it is, there is a danger that his work environment is going to destroy whatever midas he might naturally have. Not so, says the Gemara, or implies the Gemara, if you take somebody who in addition to his work takes on another job. He's the gabbai of the shul, he's the gabbai of the tzedakah, he's a melamed tinokos. That's a different story altogether, because now he finds himself involved in an occupation which is not self-centered. Now he's involved in an occupation which is outward, which involves chesed, in an occupation which involves kindness. And more than that, what's also interesting is that these people, what's important about them? Look at the types of people. Look at a girl who grows up in the home of the Gedole Hador. What does she see? So now we're talking about a Gedole Hador who is not a Talmid Chacham. We're not talking about a person who's learning a Kodol. The Gedol Hador means he's a businessman, but he's a leader of the he's one of the leading people in the generation. That's who he is, Gedol Hador. What does she see in the home? When he comes back from work, what does she see? That he comes home and turns on the television, lifts up the newspaper and reads the newspaper, what does he see? He comes home and then his work starts. Then he gets busy with matters of the community, he has meetings for the community, so what about his own needs? So she sees that his own needs come second. And what happens if in the middle of the day he's needed, there's a communal matter that needs to be sorted out, what does he do with his business? It gets set aside while he deals with the community. So she sees Mesiras Nefesh. She sees him sacrificing for the klal. That's the Midas Tovus that she sees. She sees him constantly having to put aside his personal needs for the community. And so it goes in all these cases. Rosh HaKnesis, you've got the chairman of the shul. What happens in the evening? He's got shul meetings. He's got problems to discuss. People call on him. There are issues that have to be resolved. It can happen during the day. It can happen in the evening. It can happen on weekends. He's busy with matters of the klal. The Gaboi Tzedakah, the same thing. What is the Gaboi Tzedakah? That's not a full-time job. The Gaboi Tzedakah has his own job. When he comes home, the poor people come to talk to him, to put their needs to him. He has to attend to it. He has to collect money. He goes around to the homes collecting money. So what does the girl see at the home? That there's something in addition to the man's work and to his ordinary life. And so on. What about the Amoritz? What does he do when he comes home? Who spends more time with his family? The Amoritz or these people? The Amoritz spends much more time with his family. The Amoritz comes home, he's got nothing to do when he comes home. So yes, it's true that he might watch the television a little bit and he might read the newspaper a little bit, but what does he do on the weekends? What does he do later on in the evening? He's got time to be with his family. So we might think that the best thing to do would be to marry a girl whose parents have got time to be with them. You see from the Gemara, no? And I remember my wife asking Mrs. Tendler, Moshe Feinstein's daughter, whether how she felt as a child of Moshe Feinstein not or having so little access to her father. And she commented that the knowledge that when she wasn't having access to him it was because he was busy with the klal and who he was a far more important factor in her education and upbringing than the access to him would have been. And that's a very important thing to understand. What these girls get raised with is an understanding of the importance of the klal, of the importance of Klal Yisrael, and of a sense of mission. There's a difference, we discussed on Motzei Shabbos, there's a difference between a mission and a profession. There's a difference between a mission and a job. The one requires Mesiris Nefesh, and the other doesn't require Mesiris Nefesh. And what the Gemara is saying is, marry a girl who comes from a home whose father has a mission, not just a job. Then she grows up understanding that. And then she can handle being a Talmid Chacham, she can handle her husband being a Talmid Chacham. What's the difficulty that a woman has handling her husband being a Talmid Chacham? He's never at home, he's always learning, he's never available, he's never accessible. But if she saw that with her father, if she's used to that, if she's accustomed to that, that's not a problem. On the contrary, she admires that. She doesn't want to see her husband sitting at home doing nothing all the time. She wants to see her husband occupied with these things. That's what he needs in the home, and that's what his children will need in the home. They need to see a mother who values a husband who's dedicated to a mission. And that's the essence of the whole educational environment at home. It's not a question of how much time the parents spend with the children, particularly the father. What's important is, what is the father doing when he's not with the children? That's what's important. What do the children see? The children gain from the time the father's not with them as much as they gain from the time the father is with them. What they've got to see is, what is my father giving us up for? A child knows that he or she is important to their father. And the quality of time that the father spends with the child will establish that fact. The child knows, I'm the most important thing, our family is the most important thing to my father. And yet he's at home so little. What is he doing when he's away? He's learning Torah. He's teaching Torah. He's involved in Maaseh Tzedakah. He's involved in matters of the community. That creates a certain understanding of who he is and of what Torah is and of what learning is. That educates more than any school can educate. That educates more than any institution can educate. That education is worth unlimited amounts of money. And that's why Yimkor Kol Nechosav, one must be prepared to sell everything to ensure that that kind of environment exists, that kind of atmosphere exists.